You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on June 6, 2016. My guest today is Craig Stuntz, a notable speaker about programming languages and other topics of interest to developers. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling me today.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
So I'm a software engineer. I live in Columbus, Ohio, and I work for Improving. And I have a sideline interest in, I guess you would say, formal computer science. I like to read computer science papers, and I enjoy implementing programming languages and learning about new and often very strange programming languages in the process.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to have you on the show. You presented a very well-received session at StirTrek, which is a conference here in Columbus, about unusual programming languages. Now, what is it about unusual programming languages that interest you?
So there's this concept from linguistics called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is, I think you would say, quite controversial in the linguistics community, at least insofar as natural language is concerned. There are some people who believe it and some people who don't. But basically what it says is that the language that you speak influences the kinds of thoughts you might have. And as I said, that's controversial for natural language, but I think a lot of people, and certainly myself included, feel that it is very much true insofar as programming languages are concerned. I mean, to the extent that what we do is understand a problem and then translate it into a language that a machine can understand, I think we tend to think very much in terms of those languages. So because of that, the nature of the language and the patterns that are common in that language very much influence the way that we go about finding a solution. I mean, especially given that so much of what we do is, you know, I'm going to think about a problem and then try and, you know, apply design patterns that I'm familiar with. Mm-hmm. To that extent, you know, the language and also just sort of the idiomatic code that people tend to write within a programming language community, I think they really influence, you know, the way in which we can find problems. And so one of the reasons that I enjoy learning about unusual languages is they do tend to teach you to think outside the box a little bit. And in particular, it's often the case that you can find solutions to problems that seem very different or very, very difficult within certain paradigms. So, you know, if you spend all your life in C sharp, then finding the solution to certain problems might seem really hard.
That's a very interesting approach, and you know, a lot of people claim to be polyglot developers, but I think you've taken it a step further, and you're really pushing the boundaries of what it means to be polyglot. Like, if I know C sharp and I can write JavaScript, and I can maybe call myself polyglot, right? But mm-hmm. not really, because they're very, very similar in terms of their heritage, right? And mm-hmm. you're exploring languages that are very different in from the standard, you know, Algol-based languages that we most people use. So that's a really great perspective, and I think more developers really need to learn from that as well. So in your session on unusual programming languages, you listed, you went over several of them, and one of them was called, is it Idris or Idris?
Idris, yes. Idris.
Can you tell me about Idris?
So Idris is designed to be, the creator of the language calls it a Pac-Man complete language with dependent types, and we can unpack that a little bit. There are a number of languages that have dependent types, and most of them are languages that I dare to say most developers have not heard of Nevermind used. So there are languages like AGDA and Coq, and to some degree Haskell is getting some dependently typed features, although somewhat slowly. But many of these languages Haskell accepted are not really intended to do production coding. So people don't tend to write production code in AGDA. It's more of a research language that's used more for proving than creating executable code. And one of the features that sort of sets Idris apart from some of these other languages is that it's designed very much to be a language for writing real programs, hence the Pac-Man Complete. Okay. Not only that, but there's even some thought, I don't think it's really at this point now, but there's even some thought of how you might use Idris to write systems applications, so operating systems and low-level protocol implementations, and that part of Idris is not completely there, and Idris as a whole is still very much a work in progress. But you know, in terms of what sets it apart from other dependently typed languages, I think that the real focus on producing executable programs for production use is definitely the thing that sets it apart. Then we could say, you know, what sets Idris apart from some of the other languages that sure. I talked about in the presentation. And in that case, it's the focus on dependent types. And we can dig in a little more, if you'd like, on what that means.
Well, perhaps we can do that, but you say Idris is in a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Is it is the creator of the language or others using it to solve some problem right now, or is it just, like you say, a research language?
Well, I mean, people certainly are using Idris to solve real problems right now, but the language has not yet reached version 1, and there are significant parts of the library that are in flux. So in my presentation, I showed an Idris function that will compute the average value of a list of numbers, and I had to update that function based on a new release of Idris as I was working on the presentation. Mm-hmm. So given the simplicity of calculating the average of a list of integers, the fact that I had to change my implementation will suggest to you that the language is still changing sure. on a fairly regular basis. One of the problems that the creator of the language is solving right now is how to teach people a different methodology for designing programs. And so he's writing a book called Type-Driven Development in Idris. And the 1.0 version of Idris is, the book's in preview. You can get the preview on the Manning site has Meeps. Mm-hmm. Sure. Manning Early Access Program. So you can currently get about 8 chapters of the book, and as he is explaining how to do things, he often says, well, this is too difficult, and he'll change the language to become a more explainable solution to the problem.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So I'll put a link to that book, and also to, I think you mentioned, the Sapir War Hypothesis. If I'm saying
yeah,
it right.
I mean, yeah, and I don't want to overstate that. It's sort of, you know, when people talk about my artwork is influenced by quantum physics, it's always a little bit of a stretch, and I don't want to sort of overstate there is a very real linguistic concept there that I am really kind of abusing to make my point regarding programming languages.
Sure. Sure. I just think it, you know, it'd be interesting if someone else wants to look into that hypothesis. We'll put a link to mm-hmm. it in the show notes.
Sure. Here.
So, getting back to Idris, and you sort of mentioned about the type-driven development in Idris. So, is there anything that like a C# developer or a general web developer can learn and apply by checking out Idris?
So type-driven development is a different methodology, and I would say that if you have a background in test-driven design and development, it won't sound completely unfamiliar to you. So it certainly does raise the question of how do I know that my software is correct? So one way, one technique that we use to see if software is behaving correctly is to write a unit test, and that will take a certain test case and see if the software returns the right value for that one specific test case. Another technique that we use sometimes to see if our software is doing the right thing is to use type annotations. And type annotations are kind of the complement of tests. So a test can definitely tell you when your code is wrong. It can't always tell you when your code is right. And types are sort of the opposite. They can, for certain things, tell you that your code is right, but they don't guarantee to tell you that there are, how can I put this? There are correct programs that will be rejected by a type checker. So you can think of a program that a type checker will reject, but the program is nonetheless correct. So an easy example is, you know, if true, then some value, else some incorrectly typed value. The type checker is going to reject that because the incorrectly typed value is incorrectly typed, but it will never get there because the predicate is if true. So tests and types are kind of the opposite, the complement of each other. You can do things with both of them. And then we have other things like linters that can go through and say, well, I when I look at this code, I see that the loop is counting the direction, not the direction that I would expect, and you possibly have a problem here. It's something you want to look at. And so the question comes up, so how do we design programs? And the way that some people design programs is they'll write tests first, and they'll say, okay, here's a test, and it's going to fail, and I'm going to go and write the code to make the test pass. And then the way that other people might design programs is that they'll first write the code, and then they'll write a bunch of tests for it until they're confident that their implementation seems correct. And those are both ways that you can write programs. And a similar thing comes up with types. So it is very common to, like if you're a C# developer, and especially if you're like a C# 1.0 developer, it is very common to write the type of a function and then to fill in the body of a function. But other languages will, and hang on, there's a train passing outside here.
That's okay.
Other languages are can infer types. So in a Haskell program or an F# program, you can get away with essentially never writing out type signatures for your functions, because if you write your functions correctly, the compiler can usually infer those types. So again, you have the question with types about, do you write the types first or do you write the implementation first and let the types be inferred? And IDRIS takes an interesting approach here that I think most people have never seen done, and it would surprise many people to see done, which is that given a type signature that sufficiently expresses your specification for the program, IDRIS can often infer the complete implementation of the function. So if you write a type that really says what the program should do, through the use of editor plugins and tooling, IDRIS can very often infer the entire body of the function, because it is often the case that there's really only one implementation that makes sense.
Oh, wow.
And IDRIS can figure that out for you. So when we talk about type-driven development, it can be a literal thing where you write the type signature and it literally drives the implementation of the code to the point that you really never have to type a character.
And so the obvious application here would be your programs are going to be more robust, perhaps, in general?
I have to think about how I want to answer this.
It's okay.
What I would say is that it forces you to think through the specification a bit further. So when we talk about the correctness of a program, one of the ways to think about that is, does the program meet its specification? And because, you know, obviously one can make errors in the specifications as well.
Sure.
So one of the things that we would like to do, and this gets into the one of the things that IDRIS can do, is that it can work as a proof assistant. One of the things that we would like to do is to show that our specification is at least consistent with itself. So have I posed a problem which is in fact solvable, or is it self-contradictory?
Interesting.
And so a good type system is one way that you can take a specification and say, does this make internal sense? And that's a good thing to know about your specification, because if you can write out, you can write out a specification longhand and you might get it right. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you look at some of the more difficult problems to specify, like distributed consensus, those are things that people who tend to wing it and say, well, you know, I'm going to say, I'll issue a commit on one machine and the other machines will get it and everything's going to be happy. At sufficient scale, the edge cases in your specification can kill you. So you would like to know that your specification is at least is at least internally consistent. Does it have any missing areas that you've just failed to think about? And then also, of course, you would like to know, does my program conform to the specification?
Very cool. Well, we're a little short on time here, but before we go, where can I learn more about IDRIS?
So there is, I think that the single best place to learn about IDRIS is Edwin's book, Type-Driven Development in IDRIS. I think it's surprisingly readable, given the nature of the language. It's something that you might expect to be somewhat difficult, or, you know, it might be something that you would think is, you know, an expert's only sort of thing. But in fact, I think the book uses very down-to-earth examples to show, like, that, you know, one of the first examples he shows is you'd like to write software for a vending machine, and the vending machine should, you know, always have zero or more chocolate bars and zero or more coins in the vending machine, and it should only accept a coin when there are chocolate bars available to vend. The examples are very simple, but it does walk you through how you might do a design using the natural constraints of that problem, and takes you through the process of how to implement that in a type-driven way.
Cool. I'll definitely put a link to that book in the show notes there. One more thing. Is there anything you'd like to plug or promote? Any upcoming sessions you're going to be speaking at? Or do you just want to talk about your employer? Now's the time.
Sure. I do work for Improving, and we're always looking for interesting problems to solve. One of my favorite things is to go to a company and say, what are the skeletons in your closet? You know, what are the problems you have that are so big that you think they're unsolvable, or that drive people to seek other employment, or things that are holding your business back? And the reason I like to ask those questions is that when you find the problems that people are afraid of solving, you often have a lot of leeway to use the power tools from formal computer science to attack the problems at a scale that's sort of bigger than human. I think computers are very fast, and, you know, we have a lot of resources that if we can use them effectively, we can solve problems that seem too difficult otherwise. So that's kind of my day job. One of the things that I do outside of work is I've started a group in Columbus that's a branch of the Papers We Love organization. And these are people who meet up and talk about papers from academic computer science. And if that's the sort of thing that interests you, if you just Google Papers We Love Columbus, you'll find our site. It's been a year or so since we've had a meeting, but we're talking about getting together and doing another one. And we're definitely looking for people who enjoy reading computer science papers and hopefully would even like to talk about it. We're definitely in need of presenters for that group.
My guest today has been Craig Stuntz. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns Podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast is made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype and Audacity. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes.